that every poet is a fool, but you yourself may serve to show it. Every fool is not a poet.
All right, welcome to the Poet's Pantry here at Vintage J&B. You are listening to 101.9 FM KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. And we are here every Tuesday from 1 to 3 p.m. And today's Poet Pantry is we're going to take a little diversion from what we've been doing.
Yes.
We've been mostly...
We've been skating across the country, visiting the different Poets Laureate.
Yes.
And we are all the way on the East Coast and into New England, and we don't have anywhere to go, so...
I thought we had a couple more to go.
We do.
Oh, okay, great, okay.
We have, I think, Vermont.
Uh-huh.
We have Maine.
Okay.
We have New Hampshire. But Massachusetts, surprisingly, has no Poet Laureate and never has.
No. You know, and in fact, okay, so that's a great point you're making. Because Massachusetts didn't have a Poet Laureate, we read the poet of one William Wood.
That's right.
We did. And
yes.
So in keeping with that...
Since I'm from Massachusetts...
That was your justification, yes. So in keeping with that, we'd like to welcome to the show today another poet who is not a Poet Laureate. Who knows, he may someday be.
Not yet.
Not yet. But for the moment, he is a Vashon Island poet, Tom Perksma. Tom, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, great to have you here.
Pleasure to be here.
It's funny, Bill and I had been discussing the dilemma of running out of states that had Poet Laureates and what would we do next. And I said, we should start doing friends and family.
Ah.
Because we have Bill's daughter Eve is a poet in Los Angeles. Our friend Barbara Edelman's a wonderful poet out of Pittsburgh. And so we just thought, you know, we should start circling around our friends and family. And then, of course, you know, we ran into you and we remembered that, oh, wait a minute, Tom's a poet. And you were darn handy being on the island and everything. So welcome.
Pleasure to be of service.
Yeah. So generally for the Poets Pantry, we talk a little bit about, you know, the poet's poetness. I mean, how you came to write poetry.
Well... that's a great question. And in my case, I feel like I came to poetry through the back door because I went through a long period where poetry didn't do much for me, particularly in my late teens and early 20s when I was deeply studying philosophy and was sort of obsessed with ideas and the power of ideas, which is still an enduring concern of mine. But I just didn't feel like I got poetry. I didn't get what all the flowers and clouds or whatever all about. And in my case, I had to go halfway around the world to India, where I was, after college, I was living in Tamil Nadu, the state of Tamil Nadu in South India. I was teaching English at a college, and I was studying Tamil, the language of that region. And I was particularly interested in being able to speak. I wasn't diving into literature or anything like that, because Tamil is a language which has very distinct written and spoken forms. And I thought learning how to speak was more than enough for my plate. But I had a wonderful, wonderful teacher. And one day he simply announced to me that, okay, now we're going to start reading and writing. And I reminded him that, you know, sir, I think I'm probably doing all right just speaking. That's a lot. And then he said, well, you are going to want to read the letters that we'll send you after you go back to your country.
Good point.
And I said, well, yes, of course. And you will want to write a reply, won't you? And I said, yes, of course. And he said, okay, we begin tomorrow. And as part of this process, he started me in on poetry. And he had me start with a 12th century Tamil poet, a woman, a kind of poet saint figure in Tamil Nadu named Avvayar. And he had me memorize the poems. And because there was some linguistic distance involved, I didn't quite understand them for a little while. So all I could do was listen to them. And that proved to be the great door, because suddenly I was listening to the music of the sounds themselves, and I realized that these poems sound good.
Yeah.
And so when I came back to the U.S. after that first long stay, I was awake to language in an entirely new way, and I started memorizing poems in English and in Spanish and in Greek, and then writing my own poetry as well.
How long have you actively been writing poetry?
Since about 2001.
Okay. That's enough time to get your 10,000 words in and and advance along a little bit. So have you ever published your poetry?
Well, I published a translation of that Tamil poet who was my who initiated me into poetry.
Uh-huh.
A book called Give, Eat, and Live, of Avayar, which comes from Red Hen Press. And I've been working on a series of, I have a chapbook of poems, and I have a sort of a first book manuscript, which just got picked up by Maristone Press.
Congratulations.
And the painter Galen Garwood is the publisher. And I'm very excited to have this.
That's
first
wonderful.
Book.
That's where's
when's going it going to come out? Do you have any idea?
We're tentatively looking at late winter.
That's coming
right up.
That's good.
It'll come when it comes.
It'll come when it comes. Exactly.
But something's in the near future.
In the near future. All right. Well, let's read some poems. I think we had a little conversation earlier, and I think you have three or four poems.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And if you want to give us, anything about the poems, feel free. But, I think poems generally speak for themselves.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll only say that. So this first poem is called Hushed. And I wrote it in after a visit to the Vashon Library, since we're talking about Vashon connections, not long after the newly renovated library had opened. That's not really directly relevant, but just some little Vashon tidbit.
It places it for us.
Exactly. Hushed. In the library, the young girl, her mother checking email, sang a little song she was making in the moment. It wasn't being sung for her mother or herself. It wasn't being sung for anyone around her. It was only being sung for the sake of being sung, her heart and mouth moving in the movement of the song. And I knew who she was beyond what I knew. She was me, as a child, singing to be singing. And I knew that her mother in the library would stop her, would tell her to be quiet. How could she not? But oh, for the singing that seeks no applause and is ours even in the silence.
Yeah, it's a lovely poem. I love that poem. I love that little girl.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah. Well, singing for the not to be, not it's just for herself.
Yeah. 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 Every once in a while I hear kids. They're humming away, they're singing away.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
One of the most lovely sounds.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have a six-year-old who, she'll be sitting there working on her art, and she's just singing. And she's often singing songs she's making up as she goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's lovely.
I think the poet taps into that side of themselves.
Exactly.
This one is called Stop. And it's a... I mentioned Third and Seneca, so this is downtown Seattle for those listeners who are further afield. Stop. At Third and Seneca, waiting for the bus, watching the sign saying the minutes remaining, I'm standing in the nowhere between now and arrival, knowing nothing but the passing of numbers on a screen. How many times have I waited at this stop, watching the dark buses moving and then stopping. Another in the distance passes another bus, passing another light between streets and buses. What else to do but wait? I ask it out loud, what else can I do? And a voice in my head says, stop. There is more here now than you know. So I stop, and I turn from the sign in the distance, and suddenly above me, lit by a street light, I see a city tree beginning to awaken, its branches a dark etching beneath a dark sky, full of angles and corners, no two alike. Each limb below unfolding new leaves, and above, tiny white buds as fully here now as they will be in bloom, and as tiny white petals when they fall. Returning to the stop, the streets turn to me, filling and overflowing with new budding trees. Trees I didn't see till I saw what I missed, waiting at the stop without stopping.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, yeah.
You mentioned Vermont, one of the most important poets to me as a poet and as a person is the poet Hayden Carruth, who wrote some wonderful poems in and about Vermont during the time that he lived there. And so this is the poem which is a kind of tribute to him. And it's the sort of poem where the title flows into the poem itself. So I will start with the title and go from there.
All right.
"Write a poem," said Hayden, about Hayden Carruth, who had sat now for hours, drinking and talking, listening to the things I said. An hour, I had thought, maybe two at the most, but as the winds began blowing, the talk kept flowing. "So, Tom," he said, hands on the table, "what should we have for dinner?" Joanne made filet mignon, which I hadn't had in years, and as we finished, he said, "Where's my birthday cake?" Joanne looked at me slantwise and shook her head. It wasn't his birthday at all. But she happened to have cake and served it with ice cream and lit a single candle in each piece. We sang for the heck of it and ate. "Joanne," said Hayden, "you are always making up stories," even though he admitted later that they were true. "Well, Hayden," she answered, "you're always making up facts," which he also acknowledged soon enough. We spoke of the origins of Pruxma and Carruth and how hard it is to say with any certainty. "Nobody, nobody really knows," he said. We spoke of other poets, living and dead, staying up till the winds blew away my departure, and still his mind moved like a fox. "A man is like a house," he said, coming from the toilet. "The first thing to go is the plumbing." Later, when Joanne had gone up to bed, he looked at me, sphinx-like, across the kitchen table, and said in a voice that I knew from his poems, "I've been wrong so many times, and she's been right so many times, it makes her into an ogre." And he stopped, as I did, hearing the word ogre, but only to catch his short breath. "Pruxma," he said. "Pruxma. Pruxma. That's a good name for an ogre." Such was his poem about ogres and friends, sung as the winds whipped round their house, and I sat without speaking, without lifting my glass, hoping the gale would never end.
Oh, what a wonderful evening.
Yeah.
It was a glorious evening.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like it. It sounds like it. That's great. Well, why don't we do one more?
Okay.
And it's been great to have you.
It's been lovely to be here.
Yeah, yeah. And I like this new chapter of the Poet's Pantry.
Yeah, I you know, the thing I think that strikes me most deeply about your poems is their open-heartedness. You're choosing hope over despair when despair would be a perfectly reasonable response.
That's beautifully put. My friend, the late Sam Hamill, once said that part of the poet's task is precisely that, opening the heart. Mm-hmm. And it's a lifelong task.
Yeah.
All right. So what are you going to take us out with, Tom?
This poem is called Old Teacher. It's the same mountain I've known from the water, white and majestic, solid and floating. But still, as I travel from one here to another, I see her all at once between trees in a valley. How could my breath not fly from my body, a silent, effervescent song of praise? As solid as the earth, as stone, as hardest rock, and yet moving with an ease unknown among men, save men and save women who have learned to keep moving and stay still at the very same time.
Wow.
Is a fool, but you yourself may serve to show it. Every fool is not a poet.